political national level, from the White House, we do see a different narrative. I think there's a different message in regards to the last administration. I think Biden and Vice President Harris, it seems that they are saying that they're committed to have a dignified border, to rehumanize immigration. All of that is good, but that is not being yet translated to the ground. I mean, here at the border, we're still having at least two major problems that we have mentioned already that have not changed. One of them is Title 42. Title 42 is what I consider an illegal program that is expelling refugees, families, and children without due process. And many of them are fleeing this violence, are coming to the United States to ask for protection, and they are being expelled. Thousands of people being expelled. That program was implemented by Trump. It should have been gone the first day of this administration. It has not. So the second thing is precisely that we have thousands of children in detention. So instead of investing in jails, instead of investing in detention centers, in these big shelters in Fort Bliss, for example, this administration should have done exactly that. Built welcoming centers to expedite the family reunification and to do it in a different way. But we have not seen that specifically. So I think one is the national rhetoric, and the second thing is what is happening at the border is not necessarily reflecting that rhetoric.
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us, Fernando Garcia, founding director of the Border Network for Human Rights in El Paso. He met with Vice President Harris when she went to the border on Friday. That does it for our show. A happy belated birthday to John Randolph. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresa Sena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood, Adriana Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, where the time is 6 o'clock, and we don't have the theme ready for the next show. So what we're going to try and do is turn it over to Kyle for a second so he can kill time while I'm trying to find the theme. I'm sorry, we were watching Euro, and the time got away from us.
That's no excuse, and this is highly unprofessional. I can't believe you're doing this. The time, ladies.
It's early. It's 5:59.
And everyone out there listening, this is WUSB Stony Brook. We're at the top of the hour here on a Tuesday evening. That means,
you know what?
At 6 p.m.
No, this is important. Listen to this.
I first got the vaccine, number one, as obviously to protect myself, but honestly to protect my family. I've had direct discussions after getting the vaccine with members of my own family. And I think in general, there was just kind of overall skepticism, especially in the Black community, but in Black and Brown communities alike. There are historic health inequities, and so there are reasonable concerns from members of those communities. And that's a community that I belong to as well, and that's why I had to inform myself and look at the data myself. The data was very reassuring, and one thing for me as a Black American was seeing how diverse the patient population was in each trial and feeling comfortable with that as well. There is lots of misinformation in the media, and it's hard to combat that. And so I would go with trusted sources, medical professionals, people in your community, people in your family. Ask about their experiences and get familiar.
And speaking of trusted resources, this is WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, and that's time for Off the Wall. program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Osteen here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
I am present.
But you're occupied.
And audible, right?
You're distracted. You're typing furiously onto your computer there.
Yes, I was doing a bit of free writing. You have a problem with that?
No, not at all. Not at all.
I'll go ahead. I'll revisit my words later.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Wow. So here we are, Tuesday evening, another edition of Off the Wall. And, boy, it's hot out there, isn't it?
So yes, caliente.
Yeah, it's, but you know, it's not as hot as it is in some parts of the country. 118 in Portland, Oregon? That's insane.
It's incredible.
Nobody voted for that.
It's a lot of records and this insurmountable, I don't know, it just a heat and a sustained warmth all over many places. And in fact, 44% of residences in Washington are air-conditioned. It's by far the lowest air-conditioned city
I like how
in
you
the country.
You switched from Portland, Oregon to Washington State.
Yeah.
As if they don't feel bad enough already. We're just going to talk about a different state that's not experiencing as high temperature, but still high. High for Seattle.
They're all experiencing it. The Pacific Northwest is, mm-hmm. is very warm right now, and I've been checking news in Seattle, my hometown, and am equally interested in Portland, although, you know, my affinity is where it is.
I'm hearing UConn is getting ridiculously hot temperatures. UConn. I mean, you can't think of a word that evokes coldness more than that. And heat waves, yeah. So we're lucky. You know, it's just, on the Fahrenheit scale, it's just in the 90s here. It could, I mean, it's June, for God's sake. It's still June. So anything's possible in July, August, even September. So that's reality today. What else has been happening? WUSB celebrated its 44th anniversary on Sunday. That's a real milestone.
Indeed. Many congratulations. There was a brief sort of time capsule played, that inaugural broadcast, which describes the mission of WUSB mm-hmm. and really marked the beginnings of the station. It's something that it's kind of cool to remember and hear various luminaries' takes on what that was like as we recreate that indomitable spirit every day here.
Absolutely, yeah. So as we move on to the 45th anniversary next year, that's going to be fun. And the 50th is coming up in 6 years. My goodness, wow, how time flies. Gosh, we played a COVID public service announcement, COVID vaccine public service announcement. You know, it's so important that people not think that this is over. I'm thrilled that we're able to walk around now and be social and go to places we couldn't go for the last year. But look at the rest of the world, look at what's happening in some states in this country, and you should know pretty quickly that we're not out of the woods yet. We are certainly not out of the woods by any means. I want to share one story that you might have heard of in the past couple of weeks out of Florida. There was a government office down in, I believe, Manatee County, and a couple of people died from coronavirus. Yeah, this late in the game, people are still dying. Although in New York, the state of New York, only 3 people died in the last 24 hours, which I think is the lowest it's been since this began.
That's incredible. But it is still out there, and there are people suffering from symptoms and the effects of this disease. Of course, those who've recovered have also been faced with unusual after effects or lingering effects.
The Delta variant, which, by the way, has nothing to do with Delta Airlines. You are not in more danger of catching the Delta variant if you get on a Delta flight.
I heard there's Delta
Plus.
I have to say that to calm down airline passengers.
Well, so there's enough going on airplanes already, but the way false news spreads so quickly, it's almost funny. It's not funny, but it's almost funny. Anyway, the coronavirus swept through a government building left two employees dead and several hospitalized, all of whom were unvaccinated. Yeah, they outsmarted the system, didn't they? They didn't get that vaccine in their systems. Write that on their tombstones. Don't mean to be harsh, but it just angers me to see how close we are to being at the end of this and how stupid some people are being and just willing to buy into the lamest of conspiracy theories. I mean, it's not even good conspiracy theories. They're stupid, so we could drive a truck through them. They're ridiculous. And we need to all of us, call them out whenever it happens, especially if it happens from somebody in a position of authority or trust or anything like that. You see this nonsense being spouted on television or over the radio or in a newspaper, you call it out. You raise your voice because people will die if they listen to that. There is no question. And here is the proof. Officials learned through contact tracing that the patient, the initial patient, I guess known as patient zero in that particular case, was an employee in the IT department, was infected by an unknown contact. Manatee County Administrator Scott Hopes said during a virtual news conference last Wednesday that the virus spread to four co-workers in the department, all of whom were unvaccinated and unmasked. I mean, seriously, how can you be so stupid? Do you think this was just some kind of performance art that we were all engaged in over the last year? It really happened. Masks make a difference. Vaccines make a difference. I'm sorry if you don't believe that, but please stay in your house if you don't believe that, because you're going to kill people. Anyway, another coworker who had direct contact and exposure to patient zero was not infected because he was vaccinated. Wow. That poor sucker, he bought into it. He got vaccinated and he didn't get the disease. He must feel like an idiot now. So, the individual, a 23-year-old in the IT department, got vaccinated as soon as Florida's eligibility allowed. And Hopes, the spokesperson, is also an epidemiologist, said that vaccine, I believe, not only saved him, but it appears that because he was vaccinated and he was sort of the next individual in line in the timeline that the outbreak in IT was moving in, it stopped because it ran up against a vaccinated individual. Imagine that. Like a roadblock. So it hit him and just wasn't able to go any further. Another individual who works in the same floor but not in the same office as the group tested positive on June 13th. That case is believed to be unrelated to the original outbreak. So it's happening all over the place. These types of losses are preventable, he said. The vaccine works. Life is too precious. If you're listening to the sound of our voices, this applies to you. And our signal does not just confine itself to Suffolk County. Maybe our radio signal does, but over the air, through the archives, we're reaching people all over the world, and situations in other parts of the world are dramatically different than they are in the States. We've done very well with the vaccine. Unfortunately, other countries have not done. I do not understand how some countries that were doing so well at the beginning have done so poorly in this stage. Places like Taiwan, Japan. I mean, the Olympics are coming up, and everyone's still panicking about this. Should there be Olympics? Because only, I think, less than 10% of the people in Japan have been vaccinated. We're upset because we haven't, we're not going to hit 70% by July 4th. The thing is, you could have the Olympics without any problems if people were vaccinated. Why not just vaccinate the people who are going to participate? Not have crowds of people in stadiums, because the real money is in TV anyway. And just make sure everybody who participates is vaccinated. Then it'll be safe. So I can't understand that. Levels of stupidity in all different areas. But the easiest to overcome is simply to look at the facts and do what's right for your health and the health of the people around you. And I know, you know, not everybody trust everything that they're told. I don't. I have all kinds of questions and doubts and things like that. But you have to weigh the evidence and say, okay, I don't know all the facts about this, but I know the facts about that. And I know if I don't do this, which I don't trust entirely, that's going to happen. And that's bad. You know, so you're never going to get 100% on anything. And yeah, this is new. This is new to all of us. Maybe we'll all grow second heads in 10 years. It's not likely, but it's new. So there is risk in everything. You walk out the front door, there's risk. You have to weigh the good versus the bad and say, is this worth whatever risk is involved? And in the case of the vaccine, the risk is so minimal. From so many experts, so many people who know what they're talking about, know they're not all part of one conspiracy. You could not get them all to agree on anything. But this is science. This is medicine. Please listen to those people. Don't listen to the people on TV. Don't listen to the politicians. They don't know what they're talking about. Even in politics, they don't know what they're talking about, but they certainly don't know what they're talking about when it comes to medicine and to science and things like that. So that's what's going on there. Now, 95% of those who have died from COVID-19 in Wisconsin since March, 95% of those who have died were not vaccinated. Yeah, that's almost 100%. And just 1% of all confirmed and probable COVID-19 cases since January 1st, just 1% have been among those who were fully vaccinated. How is that possible? Well, look at the numbers when they say that it's 95% effective. Where do you think the other 5% goes? Yeah, that's the 5% where it's not effective. It's still pretty good odds. But there is always a chance you'll be part of that 5%. And yeah, so some people will get coronavirus. Some people will die from coronavirus, even though they're totally vaccinated. Far, far fewer than those who will die if they don't get vaccinated. Sobering.
Certainly is. And there's been a lot of careful observation of everybody in all kind of risk categories. And there are interventions and ways that you can weather some of the adverse reactions if you're in communication with your primary healthcare provider and quickly, you know, reacting quickly if you do notice anything, and of course keeping up with what kind of advisement for your personal situation.
Yeah.
Overall, but the more this is behind us, the more the many other pressing things in the world can maybe get some attention as well.
What kind of pressing things would you like to see attention devoted to that we have not been paying any attention to over the past year or so? I mean, infrastructure, obviously, is one.
Yeah, yeah. Just been some horrific things going on with older buildings and various things. Really, really tragic stuff coming out of Florida right now.
I guess
now.
We should mention the collapse of the condo in, was it Surfside is the name of the place near Miami?
That's correct, yeah.
And you know, what was disturbing about that story from the beginning is how minor it seemed, how minor it was being reported. Building collapsed in Florida. More info later. One person reported dead. Partial collapse. Now, okay, if you look at the video of that collapse, okay, maybe it's a partial collapse technically because there's more of the building that didn't collapse. But my God, you're talking about, what, a 16-story building that just was pancaked down to the ground in two different sections? Maybe total collapse isn't the right word, but partial collapse certainly isn't as well. And to say, yeah, two people died, one person died, okay, but 150 people are missing. So it just took several days for that to basically be reported accurately. So I was a bit upset by that because the magnitude of it just made it seem like such a minor thing, and that's not minor, and it's not the only building like that down there or in other places.
Yeah, you noticed that right away, that it didn't seem to be pressing that, that folks get out of the other building of similar design.
Identical. It's like a couple blocks away. Imagine there's like a south tower and a north tower. They're not attached, but one was built and the other was built, and they're built identically. So if there's some kind of structural issue with one, there's going to be a structural issue with another. Now it's coming out that something was leaking maybe in the one that collapsed, but you still don't really know for sure that the other one is safe. So you have to really take dramatic actions. And then, of course, there's all the other buildings, and not only there, but throughout.
Yeah, apparently they line that coastline there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, inspections have been ordered, and various entities are down there working frantically to help individuals and families in that community. It's coming out that there was inspections, and there were some concerns, and the building community didn't get any urgent warning in some of the reports. They were planning, I guess, to do some improvements, but you know, it was not something that had been expedited.
Well, the condo board was warning whoever. I'm not sure who they were actually warning, saying that the concrete is deteriorating. I don't think it should be up to the condo board. The condo board are basically your neighbors. Those are people that don't really know the technical parts. You need professionals to be in there all the time checking these things out, and it doesn't seem like that was being done.
Yeah, and I don't think like the equivalent of like a neighborhood watch is as well equipped to respond and be on top of the structural design and other aspects long and short term,
mm-hmm.
in running and operating a building like that. I don't know. I'm sure there's superintendents and, you know, operational staff, but it's kind of seems like there's a lot lacking there.
Yeah. Hopefully it's an exception. Hopefully there are people who did really badly. And this isn't something that is going to affect buildings everywhere, because there are an awful lot of them that are old. They're talking about 40 years and older need to be checked. But why that number? I think they're just picking that number out of the sky because this building happened to be older than 40 years and thinking that's the problem. Well, there's all kinds of things that could be the problem. Shoddy construction, poor maintenance, adverse weather, climate change even, people are talking about as a possibility here. So
flaws in the materials.
Yeah, just picking a random number and saying, yeah, we're going to check everything beyond that, and if you're 30 years, you're fine, don't worry about it. No, that's how we get into these problems in the first place, by just making these random proclamations.
It should probably be phased, similar to like service intervals on a vehicle. Like, you got different inspections at different milestones, mm-hmm. and that should be across the board, I guess. And the public's truly trusting and you know, building their lives around these places and presumably paying top dollar to have their lovely view and all of that.
Yeah, but so, even if you're not paying top dollar, even if you're living in, you know, a tenement someplace, you still have the right to not have your building collapse.
Absolutely.
And this goes for houses, individual houses as well. Everybody has that basic right to know that they're in a solid structure.
Absolutely. Like I said, across the board. I mean, mm-hmm. we should not have to worry about things falling on you or... it reminds me of you know, various stories I've heard, you know, and people being severely injured by you know, poor tiling and things like that, just from accidents and mistakes. But you know, it can really hurt you, and you don't like to see it.
No, so. And what do you think 118 degrees in Portland is going to do to structures? You know, you don't know, because it's never happened before. So there's all sorts of unpredictable things that we're looking at as a result of dramatic changes in the climate, in the environment. So this is stuff that matters, really does. There's one other story I just wanted to get to as far as the pandemic, because it's just pretty unbelievable. But nearly a quarter of public health workers report feeling bullied, harassed, or threatened due to their work as the pandemic was unfolding. 1 in 8 saying they had received job-related threats. These are the people saving our lives. These are the people getting us through this. And they're facing public wrath for trying to do their jobs. The agency found that Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they found that almost three-quarters of more than 26,000 healthcare workers surveyed during a three-week period last year, late March, early April of 2020, felt overwhelmed by work. More than half reported symptoms of mental health conditions, including depression, among nearly a third. The troubling symptoms were more acute among workers who spent most of their time with COVID-19 patients. Of those who spent three-quarters of their work life responding to pandemic-related cases, nearly half reported symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Meanwhile, those unable to take time off from work when they needed to were nearly twice as likely to experience symptoms of adverse mental health than those able to take breaks, according to the findings. But on top of that, to have the rest of us making their lives more difficult is simply unforgivable. I mean, this has affected not only people. We learned this actually a few days ago. We visited a friend who had a couple of dogs, and the dogs were affected by not seeing people for the last year. You know, they don't know how to deal with people. They react unpredictably because they're only used to a certain small number, where normally they'd be going out and socializing and meeting new people all the time. So we know the effects that this has on individuals like us, but we might not have thought that our pets also have been affected by it.
Truly, getting out, socializing requires owners of those pets to chaperone and get you to the animal park or wherever uh-huh. that's going on. And that's so important for pets. And I think there's parallels. There's strong parallels with people. And there's a lot of anxiety, I think, and social anxiety that is going to take time for people to adjust to be truly comfortable, especially with things transforming now and on into the future. So it's just an adjustment period, and you really have to be mindful of how you treat one another and you know, really listen, be compassionate.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, you know, we critique a lot about people in society and the way that we're handling stressful situations. But I think over the past 15 or so months, however long this has been going on, we've seen pretty much only the best from people. I haven't been privy to any stupidity as far as people confronting someone for wearing a mask or getting confrontational if they don't agree with certain precautions that are being taken. I know it's happening, but for the most part, I think people have been taking care of each other. And I think that's something that gets overlooked when you hear the horror stories. You forget that the vast majority of people are reasonable and are compassionate and caring about those around them. So we need to remember that and not just assume the worst of everybody.
Truly. Yeah. Just with the masks thing, like I felt like kind of a jerk in the last couple of days just because, I've seen other people wearing masks now. I don't know why or whatever, you know, it's just all this sort of awkwardness and, I don't know, just, I think leaving people be for the time being
Felt like jerks going into the supermarket wearing a mask because everybody else wasn't wearing a mask. And then we didn't know what the rules were at this point, but it turns out that if you are wearing a mask, that means, or supposed to mean, that you're not vaccinated, which I guess can make you a jerk for some reason. But it's not, you're not a jerk if you're wearing a mask, because at least you're trying to protect people. And for whatever reason, you haven't gotten the vaccine yourself. That at least is something. The real jerk is the person who didn't get the vaccine and isn't wearing a mask, but you can't tell who that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, and throw in your own sort of self-consciousness around it. But it's pleasant overall, and I hope people continue to be respectful.
Well, when you think about what the actual ask here is, you know, put on a mask to keep people safe or make people feel better, takes nothing. It takes absolutely nothing to do that. And, you know, making that into an issue just seems so unnecessary, such a waste of time. And this would have gone so much better, I think, if we had just had more people who didn't decide to make this into an issue, didn't decide to make this into something political, which is the dumbest thing ever. But, you know, you can't really be blamed because it was coming from up on top. You know, that's it was being made political from the very top. And it's hard for a lot of people to ignore that.
But not when there are so many sports events taking place.
Yeah.
Because you can escape all of that and talk about your team.
I guess. Are you trying to move us into sports?
Well, I didn't want for the program to be all about sports, but it seems like there's a huge saturation of things going on. You can't really, I mean...
No, we can do both. We can do because we're talking about dumbasses, and you want to talk about sports. Let's talk about the dumbass at Tour de France who stepped out into the road and caused a few dozen bicyclists to fall down and hurt themselves.
I saw that.
And derailed the entire race. Did you see that? And they still haven't found her. All right, she was, this is where, in Brittany?
Correct.
And I don't know if that's her name, but it was in Brittany, France. And she was holding this big cardboard sign that apparently was a greeting to her grandparents, looking the other direction as the oncoming bicyclists, who I just found out are called pelotons, right?
Yes. It's a swarm of riders, and it's referred to as a peloton.
It's got nothing to do with the exercise thing that kills kids.
All right. Let's continue.
I just don't know how they got away with naming themselves that. Anyway.
It's not a big deal.
And also, I don't know how they get away with killing kids. But the point is, she was facing away, and I guess she didn't realize how fast they were coming. And this one guy just smacked right into the sign and lost his balance. And, of course, the people behind him were affected by that. I sort of felt sorry for her a little bit. But if she just took off and is taking no responsibility... That sympathy evaporates because you got to own up. You got to say, wow, did I screw up? I am so sorry. You know, do something, but don't run away. Because, you know, the same thing happened further on. This was the first day of the race. The same thing happened when one of the cyclists just lost his balance. And nobody from the side of the road was interfering. These things happen when you have all these bicyclists next to each other. So, the same exact scenario where all these cyclists are sprawled on the street and hurt themselves. It happens in these situations, but it doesn't have to happen due to stupidity.
And the spectators are a big part of it. They're welcome, but they're also implored to pay very close attention. They're warned a lot about do's and don'ts of standing by the road there. And, it's devastating to have happened so early in a very, very long race mm-hmm. to so very many riders. If you have a fall early on, maybe it's just a couple people at the front or the back or, you know, off to one side. But for the entire group to be subject to this in such a dramatic way. And then there were others to almost aftershocks, really. But mm-hmm. it affects that whole... group, and to, you know, you have to imagine mentally going forward, like, okay, 20 more days to get through this with all these crazy scars and injuries.
It's part of this whole thing where we don't seem to know how to act after coming out of our shells. You know, people are freaking out on airplanes, getting into fights everywhere, just acting like imbeciles. And I think this is an extension of that because there wasn't a race last year, and people are now out again. They're flexing their muscles and feeling free. And they don't seem to know where the boundaries are. And this is the result.
There's a lot of people being inconsiderate in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, I agree. I see
don't
that.
Be one of them. Be considerate. There's other people around. And we all went through something horrendous. And now we're going to go through something better.
And you don't know what anybody's going through, you know, at the moment. You
That's
know
true.
What, so you have to imagine, you know, it's been difficult or, you know, equally difficult.
Yeah, just because you feel a certain way after being inside or wearing a mask all this time does not mean the person next to you has gone through the same experience. They might have lost half their family. You don't know that. You don't know if the driver next to you who's doing something you don't like, you don't know what they've been through. You know, so we have to be a little bit more accommodating for possibilities. And it doesn't take much. Just like wearing the mask didn't take much. It's part of being in a society. One more story I just want to get to, and then we've got another feature. We know what Texas went through, what Texas is constantly going through, but with their power companies, the nightmare they went through this winter when they got just a little bit of snow and lost power for days at a time. They have a quote-unquote independent power network that cannot be hooked into the national grid. They think that's a good thing. The people, the government of Texas think that's a good thing, and now we see what a terrible short-sighted thing it actually is. So now summertime is here. There's more power challenges, more possibilities of blackouts. And what do you think they're doing? They're suffering through record-breaking heat that's pushing electric grids to their limits. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas, known as ERCOT, has urged residents to do their part by raising the temperature on their thermostats. But several smart thermostat owners, let me explain what that means. It doesn't mean they're smart. It means their thermostats are smart. And I'm putting that in quotes. They don't have consciousness, but their thermostats, you know what I mean. It's not the dumb thermostat you just turn a dial. It's smart thermostats, okay? Owners of those devices, they report that their devices have been controlled remotely to conserve energy, leaving them in sweltering homes without a clue as to why. I can tell you why. You live in Texas, where the dumbasses rule. That's the state slogan. Turns out some of them just didn't read the fine print. Several residents in the Houston area said they'd unknowingly enrolled in a program called Smart Savers Texas. Just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Smart Savers Texas, as part of a promotion. The agreement states that in exchange for an entry into sweepstakes, something we all want, electric customers grant permission for the program's operator, known as Energy Hub. How could you not trust a company called Energy Hub? Gave them permission to control their thermostats during periods of high energy demand. Yeah. So that's what's happening in Texas. People who inadvertently signed something, not knowing what they were signing, might find themselves in hot houses because some remote program someplace is raising their temperature. Yeah.
Astounding. It's out of your control. And this program you enroll in, it's how much does that cost?
I don't know.
Turn you down?
Do they charge you?
I'm kidding.
Well, you might be kidding, but they might not be kidding. You don't know.
Stranger and more bizarre billing tactics.
Things have happened, yeah, and they will happen. They're continuing to happen. My God, they're happening all the time. What kind of a world are we living in? All right. Play me off like that. Okay, yeah, it's time. A little lower, please.
Watch your toe.
It's time. No control here.
I got a lock.
It's time once again for our sustained feature, Films of the Year That Was. You know, it's a long time since we've done this.
I know.
Wow. It feels good to get back in the saddle, I guess.
Yeah, we buffed out the projector here. It's got a nice shine going.
Which is exactly what you want to do on a hot summer day, is turn on a projector.
Oh, yeah.
That's refreshing.
Well, we got to see.
All right, so what this is, this feature... it's where Kyle and I go back in time using our time machine. No, we don't have a time machine, but if we did, boy. We basically just get our hands on old films. And what we do is we see the Academy Award winning film for each year. And not to stop at that, but we also see the foreign Academy Award winning picture of each year. Each year there's an American film, each year there's an Everybody Else film. Why is everything like that? Why can't we be part of the world ever? Okay, so we are up to 2001. And no, 2001 A Space Odyssey did not qualify for that. Would have been cool, though. You know, all that year, 2001, I thought they were going to show that in a big theater somewhere, and it would be mobbed with people, and it would be such an amazing time, and I'd relive my childhood by seeing that film. But it never happened. Never happened. I'm sorry, I'm miles away. Where are... So, 2001.
A Beautiful Mind, based on a Pulitzer-winning 97 book by the same name, authored by Sylvia Nassar. This film was directed by Ron Howard and stars none other than our contender from the Down Under, Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe? Wasn't he in a film we just saw before that?
He was the Gladiator, yes.
He was the Gladiator. You know, I'm very bad with faces. I'm bad with names. I'm good with voices, but I would not have recognized him. And in fact, I didn't recognize him as the same guy from the Gladiator.
Totally different role. He plays the enigmatic John Nash, who arrives in 1947 at Princeton, gets on with his roommates, studying through his scholarship mathematics, comes up with this theory based on pickup techniques in the bar with his pals.
I didn't like any of those people. You know,
yeah.
They went back to the 40s and the 50s, and they're showing these geeky guys just insulting each other and acting like smart asses and trying to pick up women and just dressing abominably. Even I know that. I don't know. There was nothing endearing about them. There doesn't have to be something endearing about a character, I guess. But, you know, I didn't really care. Now, the story took on kind of a bizarre turn when what's his name again? John Nash? The guy you just mentioned?
Yeah, John Nash.
He basically got involved in government work.
That's true, yes. So we'll come back to the bar pickup line thing.
Is there more you want to say about that?
Well, that is actually the basis for modern game theory, which is incredibly powerful.
So this is relevant.
It is, in fact, a real thing.
Wow.
In 1953, he basically becomes a decipherer for the Pentagon during Cold War and other sort of activities, thwarting Soviet plots, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but
love story ensues.
All right, yeah, great.
Then Dr. Rosen tells the love interest that Nash has schizophrenia.
Yeah. Well, okay. So before he does that, we see all these crazy things going on where he's being chased by Russian agents and things like that. And he has something implanted under his skin, which is a number that's changing, which, by the way, that's kind of like two-factor authentication that's invented right there under his skin. They don't mention that.
It's good.
Yeah. And you start to realize that all these people, including his roommate, were imaginary, which means that he was undergoing these delusions way back in college. They don't really focus on that enough. It's implied that because of all this high stress for working for the government, that's what makes him start seeing people and imagining that he's basically in danger. It got interesting then. It was, you know, weird seeing how he dealt with all this. And it's based on a true story.
Correct. Yes. He lapses back into this after leaving some of that work, and his roommate is Charles. The character is Charles Herman.
No, he's not. He doesn't exist. He's fake. He does not exist.
In his head.
He's a lie.
And they find out he's relapsed, and he goes back, and learning to ignore his hallucinations, partners with somebody and sort of helps interpret some of his writings
what do you think of the film?
Allowed to teach and then wins the Nobel Prize.
What did you think of the film?
I remembered it as being way better at the time than it actually is.
Mm-hmm. You saw it several times.
I saw it back then.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know, in a theater somewhere. I did see it and thought it was cool, and there's intrigue and this mental illness being sort of highlighted as just another part of someone who's really highly functioning in a lot of ways and how they deal with it. I thought that was, you know, a great story, but watching it again, I was not as impressed. Like you said, there's just had a lot of oversimplifications, and there was some neat kind of technological things, but it's very much like, you know, the flying through the computers thing and hackers and stuff. Yes. Like, you know, he's just looking at a bunch of jumbled words, and all of a sudden, you know, the answer is highlighted, and oh my God, that's, but you know, in fairness, representing a lot of technological stuff is hard in a visual medium sometimes, right, when things occur in machines.
You know, you need to, you know, I'm thinking of something like Big Bang Theory, where you feel sympathy for the characters because they're endearing in some way. I didn't get that from this guy at all. He just was, you know, and maybe that's how he was in real life, although I kind of doubt it. It's, you know, there are certain liberties that were taken. For instance, in real life, he never actually saw people who weren't there. You know, it was all basically stuff inside his head, but he never actually saw non-existent people. Whereas in the film, I guess to make it more visual, he had these characters that were chasing him around. I don't know. I think they could have done it without having to go down that road.
Actually, yeah, you're right. Pointing that out, that's like a little bit more dishonest than the actual functioning illness or symptoms he might face as a person that mm-hmm. could have been described, but opting maybe for something more visual is, you know, it had sensation though.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was okay, but it didn't really capture me, you know, as my attention. And
well shot. Like I said, there were some visual effects. It was, you know, historical stuff. A little bit of period clothing and like even bad clothing, as you said, or right. vehicles, and I don't know. It was all right, but I wanted more, and I thought it had more.
I wanted less. I mean, they were just
yeah, you're right. Okay,
I just wanted a different direction, you know, of some sort.
Yeah, or depth.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed very a little bit more superficial than this film.
Oh, we're moving on. Okay, the foreign film. Go ahead.
Well, what we're talking about is No Man's Land.
Okay. No Man's Land. This is the international winner for 2001. I remember seeing this at the Hamptons Film Fest when it came out. And in fact, it's a funny story. I was with a friend of mine who didn't want to see a film with subtitles and walked out. Because that's how Americans are. And now, I'm not giving that, but now he's a successful Hollywood director. So that tells you all you need to know about movie making. But this film is one of my all-time favorites. And it's not just me like pushing back at someone who walked out. No, it really is. I strongly suggest if you want to see, and we shouldn't give it away. We shouldn't give away the ending. We usually do. In this case, I don't want to give away the ending because I want people to go out and see this film. 2001, No Man's Land. Is it a French production? It's hard to tell because there's so many languages spoken in it.
You may be correct. All of the cards are in French.
Yeah.
It's distributed by a French company. There are three production companies: Fabrica, Mans Films, and Studio Maj.
Okay, well, it doesn't really matter. It's a film with many languages spoken. Dennis, no matter what language you speak, you're going to need those subtitles.
Dennis Tonovich is the director.
So basically, it has to do with the Bosnian War. Bosnia versus Serbia, it's more complex than even that, and basically just this this ridiculous situation that results when Bosnian soldiers are trying to advance and stumble into a Serbian front, I guess, and you have a situation where basically, a couple of soldiers from different sides are trapped together, and they have this dialogue. It's got this Waiting for Godot theme to it, you know. Just it's fascinating to see just how people view each other. You realize the similarities. They're speaking the same language, you know. The language is the same. It's called different things in different regions: Croatian, Serbian, same language, different alphabet. But in this particular case, you realize the horrible tragedy of this conflict, all the good people who were wasted as a result of this, the stupidity of it all. And if you want to see an anti-war film, I can't think of a better anti-war film than this. And that includes things like Apocalypse Now and all the classics. This No Man's Land is truly a gem. And now describe this, the very opening. It gets even more interesting when the UN gets involved, when the media gets involved. You have this it's both tragic and hilarious at the same time. And I think in the end, very, very satisfying.
Yeah, borders on slapstick in moments, but it doesn't ever become a farce in that way. It's so serious in many regards and dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out, we were talking about it. It's a co-production amongst companies in Bosnia and Herzegovina, Slovenia, Italy, France, Belgium, and the UK. So it's a huge co-production. Uh-huh. But it just shows. I mean, and I think that's the importance of it. Or is a similar theme that the plot and storyline conveys, in that there's misunderstanding, there's bureaucracy, there's so much confusion, even on what was, well, really a moment of stalemate, where we begin to learn about this precarious situation.
You know, to give you, and it's so authentic too, you get the feeling you're really there on the front line. And you see the Serbian soldiers and you see the Bosnian soldiers. There's one point, just to give you a sense of the absurdity and the weird black humor that is somehow injected into all of this. You see a couple of soldiers, I think they're Serbian soldiers, just sitting on the front line, not doing anything, because that's what a lot of it is, just sitting, waiting for something to happen. And they're reading the paper, and one of them says, "Oh my God, what a mess in Rwanda." He's reading about the horrors of Rwanda while participating in the horrors of former Yugoslavia. And it's that kind of just dark humor that brings it all home, as far as I'm concerned. So it is a classic. I think it's one of my all-time favorites, and I can't recommend it enough. No Man's Land, 2001.
I forgot how good this was. It really did. We watched it, seeing it again, we made sure to watch it with a nice wide screen this time.
Yeah, we saw it right before we went to the former Yugoslavia many years ago.
I believe that was standard on a CRT even. So much has changed since then.
Yeah, and the film really, the film holds up. And
quite captivating, really well shot. And, late 90s
okay, honestly,
aesthetic.
I have to say, if you put the two together, I don't remember the title. A Beautiful Mind? A Wonderful Mind? A Stupid Mind? What was the...
Beautiful Mind.
A Beautiful Mind. It wasn't so beautiful. But whatever. Okay, fine. A Beautiful Mind versus No Man's Land. No Man's Land is far and away a better film. Why? Because it's a foreign film, it doesn't get to be number one, you know, ahead of that. It's just
shot on Fujifilm.
Okay, well, that doesn't matter to me. They could shoot it on Polaroid for all I care. It was a good film, good plot, good writing, and relevant. So incredibly relevant. So that's 2001.
Can't wait for 2002. That's gonna be fun. Gonna get a muffler for that thing.
You know that click? I think you notice how it has no power to it at all anymore. I think we shouldn't have kept it on.
We blow
in this heat. I think we might have.
Should we go switch that? Well, we'll wait.
We have a week to get a new one.
Open the.
But you know, you go down to the store. I'm sorry, just on a vent for a second. You go down to the store. I'm not gonna say which store, but it's massive. It's huge, and you want that fuse. They have to order it. They have to order the fuse, and then you have to come back in 3 days, or you can get it delivered to you. But what? It's a huge, massive store. Why don't they have the fuse? What else do you have in this store? I don't understand it. And where is the fuse? Where do you keep the fuse? Why don't I go there? Tell me where the fuses are kept, or all the objects I try to buy all the time in these massive stores that I assume can hold everything, but they don't hold anything. Just stuff I don't want. Oh, no, wait, I kicked out the plug. It's fine. Sorry. My bad. One more story before we head out of here. Because we are going to have to...
I hear there's a revolution that's on the way.
Well, there's that, but I don't think we have time. But maybe you played out already?
Okay, should hurry up.
6 minutes. Okay. Amtrak. Amtrak may not see the full $80 billion that Biden suggested.
What?
Well, you can't be surprised by that. I'm amazed if they see anything. But... there are some good things that are coming out of this. We're getting new details of Biden's revised infrastructure plan after the compromise with congressional Republicans. A total of $1.2 trillion in funding will be distributed if the bill is passed in Congress, down from an initial $2 trillion. Though some Republicans are already distancing themselves from the plan, so it must be good. Investments in the nation's railroads are still a priority in the new plan, largely owing to the president's former life as an Amtrak commuting senator. The White House maintains that the funding will improve healthy, sustainable transportation options for millions of Americans by modernizing and expanding transit and rail networks across the country while reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Amtrak is ready to support this vision for greater public transport, according to an Amtrak spokesperson. But the compromise comes with billions of dollars being left behind at the station. Only $66 billion will go to combined passenger and freight rail projects instead of the $80 billion initially allocated for Amtrak. The national rail provider quickly jumped on board the infrastructure train in March and unveiled its Amtrak Connects US plan. New rail lines were imagined, and major cities without existing rail services like Phoenix and Nashville, Tennessee, were promised connectivity to the national rail network. Parts of the plan may still be implemented, as the infrastructure plan still represents the largest federal investment in passenger rail since the creation of Amtrak. That's according to the White House. But the key victory for Amtrak would be a new weapon in its arsenal against freight trains. Yeah, Amtrak trains outside of the Northeast Corridor primarily run on tracks owned by freight companies that are, by law, required to give preference to Amtrak trains, but that's not often the reality on these tracks. Lengthy delays, often incurred by long-distance passenger trains, having to wait behind freight trains. If Amtrak can get enforceable laws on the books to give it a leg up against big rail freight, on-time performances on long-distance routes will improve. Fewer delayed trains could make the mode of travel more reliable and consistent, a consistent alternative to flying and driving. So, right now, they've got it the way they want it, according to Representative Peter DeFazio, referring to freight companies. So we're going to change the law and give Amtrak better access. And that, to me, is a good thing.
Yeah. About time. Why not?
So it's not all bad. There are some good things happening.
And many more ahead with your input.
Yes. That's all I got. Any words you want to leave the folks with?
No, not really. I'm content. I'm happy to have had the opportunity to share.
Yes.
On community radio.
Like WUSB here in Stony Brook. And again, who picks these outros? Again, if you have not gotten your vaccine, please go and get your vaccine. You'll feel great and healthy. And you won't hear horrible noises in your ears. Not that this is a horrible noise, just I don't want to compete with it.
I think we need to cool off. I think there's something wrong with the board. That's got to be explaining all these sounds.
No, I haven't put anything up. This is the board is making this noise.
Okay.
Okay, we're out of here. Finn's up next.
Yeah, that cord's really, really hot.
I'm not touching it. Write to us, otw@2600.com. And stay tuned to 90.1 FM or 107.3 FM or WUSB.FM on the internet. And we will see you next week.
Have fun.
Good night.
Revolution, WUSB Stony Brook, until the 9 p.m. hour. We shall be rocking some weirdo tunes, taking a train, doing a whole bunch of stuff. Right up until 9 p.m. on WUSB Stony Brook. So please, keep your ears glued to the track. Let's go.
Did you come to this life? How can you be everybody's dream and still be somebody's wife? Tell me, what did you have for lunch today? That's right, how would I know? How would I know? You're off somewhere being free while I starve in the lonesome cold. Our bodies got used to each other, now they're used to the sound of Richie Havens' voice on the vinyl, spinning round and round, round and round. Sometimes I feel like I was born way too late. Should have been born Stock stage, but I'm just here waiting and waiting and waiting. Somebody famous had a birthday today. All I saw was another full moon. Something's burning on the stove. Must be the pasta. Must be the pasta. Oh yeah. It's June.
Brand new from Prince, this is Camper Van Beethoven. Mm-hmm.
Stretching out on the track.